listening to Season 2 of Peace Signs, Stories of Peace, Justice, and Faith at Penn State University, brought to you by Third Way Collective.
Why don't we do this just as a conversation?
Okay.
And
that
you
would
can,
work fine.
And then we can edit it and play with it that way.
Yeah.
My name is Peter Buckland. I am the Academic Programs Fellow at Penn State's Sustainability Institute. But I've lived in the area for almost my whole life. I grew up in Pine Grove Mills, which is just 5 miles away. I went to the local high school. I did my undergraduate and my graduate degrees at Penn State. I've lived in some other places, but I've basically been a lifelong resident.
I'm Ben Weidman, and I'm about to end my second year as campus pastor for an organization called Third Way Collective that started in the fall of 2014. And we focus on specifically the intersection of peace, justice, and faith, and trying to bridge the gap between groups of faith and groups focusing on justice issues and creating spaces for those things to happen together. I'm new to the Penn State community. I arrived to take this job and grew up in Canada, went to college in Virginia, grad school in California, and now I'm here. What's your faith background, or who are you as a spiritual person?
I grew up in a nominally Catholic house, but I haven't been a practicing Catholic except for singing in church when I was a kid. Yeah. And, you know, growing up, coming to college, I had a very brief kind of experience of like extreme Christian fervor that was in the midst of a crisis in my life. And then I decided that that was not really at all me. My poor friends who had to deal with me for that, those few weeks or whatever. But I would say that for most of my adult life, I've been a pretty die-in-the-wool non-believer. And then a few years ago, my sister, who has this really incredible sort of meandering spiritual path, was almost a nun, has been involved with Wiccan communities and things. I mean, she's just very sort of promiscuous with her spirituality. She decided that she wanted to become a Unitarian Universalist minister. And I knew a little bit about Unitarian Universalism and thought, well, okay, so they're sort of like a church. And then a couple of years ago, I started going to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Center County and found a nice community, a group of people who were really devoted to a kind of ethical life that is very much about dignity and consciousness of the web of life, responsibility, in a way that I just found incredibly, incredibly warm and opening, inviting, I should say. And so I would say that now I'm a Unitarian Universalist who's also still a non-believer.
Just reading some of the stuff that you've written in personal reflections and your blog and things like that, it seems like you've always had a deep sense of a mystical connection with nature, or a finding a spiritual identity riding through the trees or hiking or whatever that might be.
Yeah, I would say my father was, he was an English professor. He taught poetry. He taught the Bible as literature. And I grew up in a very, like, literary house.
Yeah.
And artistic experience of the universe is really, really important.
Yeah.
And nature was certainly a huge part of that. And, you know, we live in a place that has just an incredible array of plants, animals.
Mm-hmm.
It has a pretty consistent landscape. It's like farms or it's forests, you know. But I've loved it my whole life. And I feel, you know, I don't really use the term spiritual very much, but I do feel a kind of transcendent connection to it that is probably what other people would describe as feeling the divine or being in touch with God or in communion with God. I mean, I certainly feel like I am part of something way bigger than myself when I am out in nature or even just sitting here talking to you. I mean,
yeah,
you and me together are more than just me, and I think that we're being connected right now. Well, I hope we are. Yeah. What about you? How did you
Well, I mean, I think a huge part of my sense of my spiritual identity is tied into the tradition that I'm a part of. I am currently an ordained Mennonite minister, but that faith tradition has been in my storyline for centuries, really. My long ago relative rode his horse from Pennsylvania to Southern Ontario and became the first ordained Mennonite minister in Canada 200 years ago. And the church that I grew up at, Wideman Mennonite Church, is named in his honor. So coming now to Pennsylvania as an ordained Mennonite minister, it's sort of a strangely circular journey then, coming back to a place of my religious origin, family of origin. And there have been a few moments in my life, especially when I was going through seminary, where I took a look at other faith traditions and thought pretty hard about what it would mean to be a part of them. And it was actually my wife who said, you can trick yourself into thinking that might work, but I know who you are. You are deeply ingrained in the Mennonite world, whether you like it or not. It's just, it's in your DNA. She did not grow up Mennonite, and I think that voice of wisdom from an outsider was probably helpful in continuing to shape who I am as a person of faith. Mm. I will say that I've had a few moments of sort of spiritual crisis in my life, and one of them was going to college and being around people who were thinking outside of the box in terms of faith, spirituality, how the world works. And it was comforting to me to find really brilliant, smart thinkers in faculty positions who were also committed to their faith tradition, their faith perspectives. I think without those examples, I probably would have been done with this whole thing a long time ago. And another piece of that is that they were people who made their faith practical. I think in high school, especially, my faith was predominantly about getting into heaven, sort of getting the prize at the end of this journey of life. And those mentors in college and then grad school were people who said, you've got to shift that thinking to say your faith has to be transformative in the here and the now. We don't know enough about what comes next to know, to sort of stack up all of our hopes and dreams in that. It's got to be about changing the current context in some way, making it a practical sense of experience. I would name those moments as being pretty formative in who I am today as a minister.
So living out a practiced ethic
right.
from your Mennonite tradition?
Yeah, absolutely. Part of it is from, I guess, all the way back to understanding the stories of Jesus as being the way we live out our life and the lens that we use to view the rest of Scripture. It's a very Anabaptist or Mennonite thing to sort of put that at the center. There's a Christocentric is the term that some people use for that, sort of using the person of Jesus as the lens that we understand everything else in the faith tradition. And you know, when you read those words from so long ago, very little of it is about getting into heaven. It's almost always about reaching marginalized people groups, spreading peace wherever you go, trying to offer spaces for people who are social outcasts and raising your voice when the powers and principalities are screwing over the little people.
Right.
It becomes a very, very practical kind of faith, I guess.
And about dignity.
About dignity, about justice, about a sense of belonging in place for everyone, regardless of who you are. And sometimes, especially if you are an outcast, maybe even more so for those people. Yeah. I guess knowing your journey towards Unitarian Universalism, I'd like to hear you talk about You obviously found this community here in State College, but what's it like to be part of the Penn State community, knowing that's a part of your identity? Is it something that influences your work here on campus? Is it just sort of something you carry around hidden? Or
So I wouldn't say that I bring a, well, I'm a Unitarian, and this is, you know, that's never, I've always had a bit of trouble being a joiner, being seen as really a part of something, you know. That's just, I mean, being a non-believer is that, right, you get this kind of badge of honor by not being a part of something, right?
Yeah.
And then you become a part of something by not being a part of something. And so I would say that my Unitarianism is something that I came into because I felt like the community was more or less set up and I could join it, and I wasn't, it's not like I grew up in it or something like that. And so I can say, oh, well, I'm a Unitarian, sometimes with other Unitarians, or if it's something where I'm, if someone is curious. I would say that, you know, some of the ethics of being a Unitarian, I mean, they inform, you know, almost everything that I do as, and that goes from being an artist and poet to being an elected official and working at the Sustainability Institute. You know, part of, if I take the two things that I've brought up already about dignity and respect for the interconnected web of life, I mean, I think that those two things, I try to infuse more or less everything that I'm mindful about doing with dignity for all creatures in the web of life. And, you know, and we can think about that in any number of ways. I mean, the Pope and E.O. Wilson, the great conservationist and biologist, entomologist, both talk about the creation. And E.O. Wilson, like me, is a total non-believer, and the Pope is a Christian who, I mean, obviously a very different tradition, but who believes in the saving power of Jesus Christ. And we both sets of people can agree that the whole of this creation should be treated with dignity, not as a commodity to be pushed around or something to be packaged and merely sold or despoiled or scarred, bruised, raped. You know, we can put all kinds of sort of metaphorical verbs on this. You know, no, we should love, care, protect, nurture, steward, you know, have more of an I-thou relationship with the creation than most of our culture certainly today has. And the rise of quote-unquote, you know, Western civilization over the last 400 years has a bad record. And so I think that being a Unitarian brings people to be much more conscious about that, about those relationships. And so my work, you know, professional, artistic, and, you know, civic, is completely informed by that ethic. I hope it is anyway. I mean, you know, I'm a person and I fail all the time and don't live up to what I wish to do, but, you know, that's part of my goal.
I'm drawn to that thought that the Unitarian Church provides a space to belong for someone who doesn't like to be categorized or put in a box. Like that, that's kind of cool. I mean, if you can be a category or a box for people who don't like that,
yeah,
it says something about what they're cultivating in that tradition, I think, if that can be.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that, you know, there's a long history of sort of religious skepticism in Unitarianism,
in,
you know, and this, you know, kind of, I think to a traditional Christian sect, or, I mean, really traditional anything sect. Unitarians are completely crazy because they say, well, you know, you can be a Buddhist Unitarian Universalist. And there are. And people are like, yeah, but then you're not a Buddhist, are you? And it's like, well, no, you are. Right? Or non-believing, or, you know, our director of religious education at the UUFCC, he's a Christian Unitarian. And he'll say that. And I can feel sometimes there are a few of these, you know, Unitarians in there who are like, what? Is he really? You know, I mean, and then others who are like, well, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like Thomas Jefferson is a lot. He wasn't a Unitarian, but that sort of set the stage, I think, for a lot of, you know, Unitarianism.
Well, we've already kind of touched on the question I usually ask next of, you know, how your faith affects your work here at Penn State. I don't know if you had something to follow up with me about.
Well, I mean, you do... you're enacting your sort of, I don't want to say really, sort of like your faith persona through your work, right? That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. So sometimes frighteningly so. I mean, in terms of like creating a student organization from scratch, much of what I do is what I think should be done. You know, it really becomes, Third Way Collective becomes sort of, whatever I bring to it. Now, some of that's starting to change as we get more invested student leaders. I think they're bringing their voices and perceptions. But in the early going here, the students who've been drawn in are students who are interested in faith-based peace and justice, not necessarily coming at it from the tradition that I do, but being drawn towards a space that offers that at Penn State.
Yeah.
And so... yeah, they're coming in, I think, because I'm creating that space, and now they're going to be transforming that in the ways that they do. And naively, I think I thought, oh, I'm a Mennonite pastor, so I'm going to create this thing, and all these Mennonites are going to come out of the woodwork and participate. But it hasn't been that way. It's been people from other faith traditions sort of frustrated that they don't have a space to explore peace and social justice on campus in their worlds, and so they're coming, knocking on the door, saying, I want to belong, even if I don't, if I'm not a Mennonite, or even if I'm not a Christian. One of our most passionate student leaders is a practicing Buddhist. We've got a frustrated Catholic who's been a really significant part of our group, and a Unitarian who's joining our team next year. And I think they just see this as a space where they can feel welcome, and a space where they can create something that's a little bit different than what the other 65 faith groups are doing here on campus.
So, I mean, I think that you and I have a real kind of calling to justice. I mean, I think that we share that, and we're different people, so we do it a little bit differently.
Yeah.
But we both went on this ride.
Yeah.
We both believe it's about climate justice.
Yeah.
So climate change for so many religious folks is like, it's just not part of religious ethics or whatever, but that is clearly not the case for you. You are very interested and engaged, and I wonder how that came about for you.
I'm sure some of it has to do with the sort of godless Canadian political upbringing that I have that sort of prioritizes things like environmentalism in the public sphere in a way that doesn't happen here in this country, especially from people of religious backgrounds. But I think Mennonites are a little quirky and unusual in that because of their agricultural history and background, there's always been a sense of responsibility to care for creation, and not just in the, oh, these are resources God has given us, and so we can exploit them and take advantage of them. But, you know, Mennonites have taken wasteland, land that people don't want to use, and have transformed it into sort of lush, healthy, vibrant ecosystems. So I think it's part of the cultural DNA of that tradition. Mm-hmm. Now, some of the sort of climate science... that I don't think comes from my tradition at all, but it's just a coincidence that it fits nicely. I think the sort of realizations that, that science is showing us how damaging our practices have been, just sort of affirm the agro narrative that my people have had for a long time. You know, care for something if you want it to last. And we're learning that to be true about the entire planet. And, I think that's where it comes from. I think I've said before in different spaces that I was raised by people who live simply out of a need rather than some sort of bigger picture of the health of the planet. My family didn't have a lot of money, and so my mom was a mom who would wash out little plastic Ziploc baggies and you know was not throwing things out because it was saving money, and that was, I think, really that shaped me early on. Sometimes in a negative way, you know, I kind of wished I had the the disposable stuff, the snack packs that my friends had. But I came as an adult to appreciate that kind of an upbringing.
But thrift and, say, profligacy are, I mean, the Bible does not view these things, you know, as, you know, like thrift is kind of like, that's a good thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Being profligate and wasteful.
Not a good thing.
Not so good. Right.
Yeah, that's true. And I think even more than that, the a Jewish practice of, you know, when you're harvesting your fields, leave grain behind for the people who are going to come after you who don't have as much. Don't store up more than you need because there are hungry people out there. Some of those very ancient principles and practices are a core part of both the Jewish tradition, the Christian tradition, and even into the Muslim tradition of, you know, take care of the people around you before you start bankrolling yourself. Make sure that and I should say also the Mennonite tradition has this really strong past sense of mutual aid. For a long time, they stayed away from insurance and just sort of said, if someone in our community is hurt, sick, hungry, we step in and take care of them with the resources that we share together.
Their own kind of insurance.
They were their own. And you still see that with Amish barn raisings. You know, there's a need. Let's just go and take care of it and handle it that way.
Peace Signs is a project of Third Way Collective, committed to Christ-centered peace, justice, and faith at Penn State University. To find out more and to lend your voice, like us on Facebook, follow on Twitter, or visit us at thirdwaycollective.org.